Hello, and welcome to Connecting You to You Radio, where we tune in to receive the messages of health and well-being that are being broadcast from the soul. I'm your host, Lisa Warner, author of The Simplicity of Self-Healing. I show you how to heal your body naturally by combining your body's innate intelligence with the wisdom of your own soul, so that you can break through the mental programming of limiting beliefs that cause disease and make healing your body and changing your life simple. Welcome, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Soul Stories, because every soul has a story. And today we are here with a beautiful soul, my soul friend, Rosemary Marchetta. Rosemary and I have been soul friends for, oh my gosh, a long time, over a decade easily. And we have been on a spiritual journey for a long time with Kathy from our last episode, and our other friend Maria Paz, and the four of us have been like the four musketeers for quite a while now. So I'm very excited to have Rosemary as our guest today. Rosemary, welcome.
Thank you, Lisa. Thank you so much for having me. This is exciting, and I'm glad you're doing this program. So it's nice to hear other people's stories. Really, that's what we have as people. We have stories, and we can share our stories. One of my favorite things to do is sit around the campfire, and in the night, with the fire going, people start to tell their stories, and it's just a great occasion to know people and get to know people and have people share really meaningful things happen in front of a fire. So we're not in front of a fire right now, but we can share our stories.
Yeah. And, you know, I love that you bring that up. And just when you think about it, used to be the oral history was passed down through stories, like the whole history of the universe was passed from generation to generation through stories. And, you know, now those stories have kind of gotten a little frayed at the edges, let's say. So right. By us sharing our stories, we can start to help bring the stories of humanity back into alignment with the divine design, with the divine story.
Yes, I'd say that is as divine beings in a body, we are this stream of divine light that's unique because we're all in different bodies from different perspectives. We share our unique perspective. Like my story is my stream of consciousness from source through rosemary colored glasses, and yours goes through Lisa filtered glasses. And in the end, we're all the same source light in all its multiple facets. And that way, it's really beautiful when you can appreciate other people's lives and their stories as just another facet of this grand whole that we're a part of.
Exactly. I love that. So where did your story start?
Well, my story started long before I remember, I'm sure, and many, many lifetimes ago. I feel like I have been on Earth for, let's just say, multiple, because I don't know, 1,000 lifetimes, a long, long time, lots of lifetimes. And sometimes I get inklings of different places. I think it's the learning, the wisdom from all these lifetimes that comes into present moments, and the woundings also that especially that come into present time to be healed, to be released, the trauma. I think a lot of people are going through that at this point in time. We're releasing trauma from our own past incarnations, as well as like our present life, and it's stored in our DNA, stored in our genetic code, our own ancestry of trauma through the lifetimes, not necessarily ours, but our ancestors. So, yes, I began a long time ago, but in this incarnation as Rosemary, I was born in the U.S., grew up outside of Philadelphia, mostly on the East Coast, but I've moved around a lot. I moved around a lot and done lots of different things. But I guess I could say I've always been an artist. If I were to say how I identify, I'm an artist, and in that I make physical art, but it's a creative practice. And I love a creative challenge, even if it's a writing challenge or a creative project of thinking, like going through concepts, coming up with how to move things around conceptually and rephrase our thinking. And basically, that's a creative process. I studied art in school. I've been painting and drawing for all my life. and even when you're not practicing, I go through times when I paint a lot. And other times I also do photography work and digital art. And sometimes I'm a lot more productive than others. But even those times when I'm not actually producing art, I'm still going through this process. And they're like a creative output could come out of that or not. Because I really figured out a long time ago that my art is just me working through what I have to work through. And then that's what's important. It's the deep inner things for me that have meaning for me. And by putting it out in a physical form, I can also often I find out what it was all about. I learn from that. So I might draw or paint something just spontaneously, and then when I see it, I get what the real message is for me. So it's the kind of, it's a way of life. And I do it for this reason. I realize that it's about learning who I am. And of course it's fun. I love to, it's where my passion is. I get more excited when I'm creating art than I do, and you know, doing lots of other things that we do in life. So I guess I could say I'm the kind of person that likes a lot of change, and I like a lot of newness, and I'm like consuming these ideas and producing art. I like to travel. I like to see new cultures, new foods, new, you know, experience different places. And so I haven't really done the normal, the life. At one time recently, somebody asked me, "Rosemary, how did you get out of the box?" And I thought that was an interesting question because my life doesn't really fit, you know, the normal things that people do. And I said, really, I don't think I ever got into that box. From early on, I didn't want to have a job. I didn't aspire to be a bride walking down an aisle and have a job. And none of that was interesting to me. So when I was in my late 20s, I had a job, but I quit it. And I wanted to travel. I was desperate to travel. And I had never been to Europe. And so I just bought a one-way ticket and off I went by myself. I had a couple of people that I knew in different places, but I wanted a travel adventure. And I ended up settling in Spain, in Mallorca, eventually a beautiful place. And I settled down there. As soon as I was there, I knew I was in the right place. And it felt much more like home than anywhere that I had lived in the northeast of the U.S. That had never really felt like home, but the Mediterranean grabbed me. And I love it. It's my favorite area in the world. And I ended up staying for a long time, a couple of decades. I made my life there. And really, that's where I started to do my art in a more serious way, where I set up a studio and had exhibitions and was spending a lot more time producing art and artwork. But it's a great, if anybody's looking for a destination and where to travel to and they don't know where to go, anywhere around the Mediterranean, the history is so rich. I just love that body of water. Mm-hmm. And I like the climate, the food, everything that has to do with that area.
I agree. Oh, I always feel so relaxed and at ease in that area. And there's so much to explore and see and do. And you can just, I feel like I can just be when I am there. You know, I mean, because I'm always on vacation when I'm there. So of course, being is easier when you're on vacation than when you're home doing work.
It is a great place to be, yes. And the whole coastal area of the Mediterranean is so rich with history, Western civilization, like the Greeks and the Romans and the North Africans and the Spanish. I mean, every area has its own piece of Western civilization's history to tell. So, yeah, I could explore there a lot more, but I think it was the right place for me to be. Now I'm in Miami, I'm in the U.S., and Miami's fine too. But I have a piece of my heart is still in the Mediterranean.
Yeah, well, at least Miami's a little bit more similar to the Mediterranean than the East Coast where you were in Rhode Island.
Northeast, yes. Yes, yeah. I'm not a fan of the winter. Just not for me.
But now I don't get to just drive down and see you on weekends from time to time.
Well, it's a long drive from, you're basically in Canada.
Yeah, right. Yeah, Providence is doable, but Miami's a little far to go for the weekend driving.
Well, you got to take a flight.
Yep.
Got to call up your pilot and say, take me to Miami.
That's it. Or remember how to bilocate. That'll be far easier.
Now, that is a skill that would be a lot of fun to have.
Right?
Yes. Yes. We could be doing this, you know, from someplace else together in the same room.
Right. We could be in the Mediterranean doing this.
Be in the Mediterranean. Yeah.
Yeah. Sitting in a little outdoor cafe.
Next time. Right. Set it up for next time.
Yeah, I absolutely believe that that's an innate ability that we have as humans, but that it has really gone dormant, that ability to bilocate.
Yes, I think there are a lot of abilities that we have as humans that we don't use and we haven't used. And things just like our sixth sense that lots of people talk about, intuition and sixth sense, it's not in the realm of abnormal at all. Basically, everybody can feel when somebody's staring at them behind their back, right? You can feel it, you know it. There's all kinds of things that are outside of our range of our five senses, strictly speaking, but we sense them. There's other senses that have been dormant. So awakening those senses, I think, is an important thing. A lot of people are going through this awakening process where we are awakening to our internal side. And I think as an artist, that's one thing I've always been connected with, my internal vision or my internal senses, because that's what an artist does. Or maybe not every artist, but a lot of artists, we're drawing from within. And so I've always felt connected with my inner world. And so meditation and doing these other spiritual practices seem to flow naturally, because before I sit down and paint, for example, I might just sit there and I'm just sitting there. But within, all of these things are developing. And so, like a meditation practice, you are sitting calmly, but within, there's lots of things that are developing, and it's such a healthy and, you know, uplifting thing to do that I can't imagine what life would be like if I didn't live that way.
Right? So, it's like such a necessary thing to be able to calm the mind and start tuning into the divine mind. You know, we have all been taught to think. And we've been told, you know, since childhood, we've sent off to school to learn how to think, learn, you know, what to think and when to think and how to think, instead of being able to develop our own organic thoughts. We've been given thoughts. So that meditation is so important.
Yes. And that kind of thinking that you're describing, this organic process, it's much faster. It's not a linear process of reading information from a book, which is really not a natural process.
Exactly.
And if you think about it, really, it's a 20th century, maybe even 19th century. But even in the year 1900, there were a lot of people that didn't go to school, that didn't read books. Mm-hmm. So in the world, like in the U.S., maybe there were a lot of people in school. But before that, all of history until the 20th century, people were not sitting down reading from books. They were doing other things. So it's a really recent phenomena, this very linear way of thinking, which when we're then directed to do that, it seems like that's the only way, where there's a lot of other kind of thinking. I practice and I teach drawing on the right side of the brain, which is a brilliant method for drawing. And the premise is that anyone can draw. And it actually works. The woman who wrote the book, Betty Edwards, taught hundreds of workshops. And in a 40-hour training, she would have people drawing realistic portraits. Because what you're training is your brain and your perception. You're training perceptual skills, and when you see something, you can draw it. But our linear thinking is not set up for that kind of perception or seeing. And so when we're in our linear thinking, we can't really draw something. But the right side, I mean, and people debate, is this really right and left? I don't know, it doesn't really matter to me. It's that other side of the brain, the other aspect of the brain, I will say, that is nonlinear and that can see things in a way that drawing comes naturally.
Wow.
So yeah, it's super cool. And it's amazing to see people who take the course. They're amazed at themselves that they didn't know that they could draw.
Right? So many skills that we all have. I mean, I think all humans can do this. Like, I don't think it's, you know, only for certain people. I think that all of these skills are there. And it's just the matter of accessing them and bringing them forth.
Yes, these latent or dormant skills that, and then they're fun. That's the other thing. It's fun. That's why people do these things in their spare time, because this is really what they want to do. Drawing is fun. And, you know, singing or whatever way that inner spirit comes out. And that's what people like to do. That's how people want to spend their time, dancing or ice skating, whatever it may be.
Yes, but so many people, they just don't do those things because you can't make money at those things. You got to have something that you can make money at. And it's so sad to see the state of affairs.
It's sad that these things are not valued in a monetary way. Yes, it is. But, you know, I'm not letting that influence my, you know, choice to make art or do what I do. Exactly. And I guess I've always been that way too. I haven't gotten in the box. It's not my style. Although, you know, my life has definitely been influenced by the outer world. It's not, I'm not trying to pretend that it hasn't been. But my inner world has been, you know, a rich source of my own inspiration. And it comes from a connection of what's beyond. Artists talk about muses, musicians, people say, you know, it's just coming through me. And I think that's an experience that every artist probably has, musician, as they're working. The inspiration comes through you and you put it out there in your own unique way.
Yeah, I love that. I love seeing through your eyes when I look at your art. You know, I get to see from a different perspective. And I always remember when I came down and you had the exhibition in Providence with you had taken photographs of throughout the city, and then you superimposed pictures of water on this. And right. It was so brilliant.
Thank you. Yes, I have fun doing that. That for me is my way to have fun. So I'm glad you appreciated it. Yes.
For sure.
And I guess also I want to talk about, speaking of creativity and being creative, I want to talk about this project, the Sanctuary Project. Mm. This sanctuary, it kind of needs a little explanation because it's not that common an affair, I guess, an event, but it stems from my creative inner knowingness. And at one point I was like inspired with this idea of creating it's almost like a wellness center, but in the subtle realms, in the experience, in the what's that word, in the etheric realm, not in the physical realm. So, and when I get this kind of inspiration, I really feel it in my body. Like I know that it's the right thing, but I really did not know, well, how do I go about doing this? And it's funny because these subtle realms that I'm aware of, maybe a lot of people are not aware of, or they don't know that they're aware of, most likely. And for me, creation in that realm seems very fluid and I feel very capable. And when it comes to doing things in the physical world, that's when we have all these, you know, stumbling blocks and obstacles to get things done. But in that realm, it's much more fluid. So I felt like I needed to do something. I spoke to some people who are part of a meditation group that I know and participate in. And a small group of us sat down and over a period of several sessions, we co-created this space that was, I would say it's an etheric spa.
I love that.
And so with our consciousness, with our intention, with our guides and our like knowingness, we put together energies woven together. And people ask me to describe it. It's very hard to describe because every person perceives it differently. But I want to say, it's like, do you have a favorite place in the woods where you go and sit down, a favorite tree or a favorite stump? A lot of people have this favorite place. I used to have one. I don't really have an exact place now, although I have a favorite zone. But when you have this favorite place that you go, you just go and you sit down, and nature, like the tree knows you, the ground knows you. It's like you fit right in, and you feel, if you're, you know, if you're sad or if you're worried, you feel like you're nourished from nature, like the little squirrels are there, so, you know, like that kind of thing. And this is what the sanctuary offers. It offers this comforting cocoon-like atmosphere where you can then like relax, get in touch with your inner wisdom, and help to like clear your head and calm your emotions and expand your consciousness, whatever is your need at the moment. It would be like, you know, a greenhouse. Instead of being outside in a windy storm, you're in a greenhouse where you can kind of grow your leaves. So the sanctuary is this energetic space in the etheric realms, and it's for everybody. When I initially got the idea of bringing this into some kind of reality, the idea was that this is for everybody. Everybody can go there. Seeing how it's beyond space and time, it's not, you know, it's not like there's a limit to it. It's for everybody, everybody. Now, if you have no inkling about meditation, well, you're probably not going to be interested in the first place. Because you need to be able to access this kind of realm, which comes through some kind of basic meditative practice, or even, you know, for somebody who's walking in the forest alone and they just want to sit down and be quiet next to a stream, that kind of, and allow the stream to just talk to them. It's that kind of thing. So it doesn't take any advanced skills at all. But we call it the blue light sanctuary, so that the blue light can be some kind of reference point, like a beacon that people can, because people's minds are very busy and very loud. And so to have something that you can focus on is like a way to calm down, and with your intention to access the sanctuary, focus on the blue light and intend for an experience to occur. So we have different kinds of experiences by different people, mostly I think calming, refreshing. Those are the kinds of feedback we've had. It's a small group of people who have used it, but I think it would be great for more people to use it, because it is a valuable, like a valuable free resource, like a city park that everybody could just go and sit and be with nature, even if you're in the middle of a big city. So we have a YouTube channel.
Nice.
The Blue Light Sanctuary is a YouTube channel with some guided meditations for people that want, because like, you can't, how do I just go to this place that I don't know what it is, people ask. Well, right. You have to really put your intention there. And then some of these guided meditations will help you connect. You don't need to use them. You can listen to any kind of music or be in silence, whatever your preferred space is. But the intention to connect is step number one.
Yes. Awareness of the space, and then intention to connect into it and be in the space. Yes.
Exactly. And the more people that use it, the more like you, it's more, it feels anyway to me that it's more accessible.
Yes.
You know, like a path in the forest, that the more people that travel that path, then it's easier to get to, you know, to walk along that path and get to where it leads. Yes.
Exactly.
So I invite you, well, you know about it, and anybody listening, if they want to have this experience, the Blue Light Sanctuary. We also have a Facebook group. There's a link on our YouTube channel, but you can find it through YouTube or Twitter. And enjoy, connect. I think it's just, I mean, who couldn't use a spa moment in their life?
Exactly. So for anybody that's watching, just check the show notes, because we'll have the links in the show notes. You can just click on the links and find out more. And at the same time, you don't even really need the links, because you can simply set your intention and tune in. This is the ability that we all have. So being guided is phenomenal, and you also can do it on your own.
Yes, just tune in. Tuning in is the thing for everybody anywhere to really to know thyself. If you want to know thyself, well, look within.
Exactly. So tell us about the color blue, because I have the feeling that there's a significance to the color.
Well, that's an interesting question. It just seemed right from everybody that was part of the group. Blue is a high vibrational color, the highest vibrational color, especially like the indigo blue gets very high. Some people relate the color blue to all kinds of the blue light beings, to blue of the Assyrians, blue of the Pleiadians, different color blues from different star nations that are out there. So it doesn't have a specific, like, the blue means this definition. For me, the blue is, it's calming of the mind. The blue just relaxes your brain and calms your mental, emotional body. And I think that's its immediate impact. But I feel it's also an important connection to go to beyond, let's say, beyond the physical and into more expanded consciousness states.
Yeah. And, you know, if it was red, it would have a completely different effect on us.
Yes, a different frequency. It's a frequency state. When I'm in meditation and leave, I feel like I'm in a very, very expanded state. I feel weightlessness, like the gravity disappears. I'm feeling my body just kind of, there's no gravity. And I always see myself in this field of blue. And it's kind of like a, you know, twilight after the sun sets, but before it's dark, that kind of blue, infinite blue of the sky. And it almost feels electric. It feels very alive and charged. And I'm in this space just floating in the blue.
Isn't that amazing? And water, the ocean is blue. You know, there's a real significance. You know,
this is the blue dot, the blue planet. Exactly. We are. So, yeah.
Yeah. You know, and every color has a different frequency. So every color has a different effect on us. So I think it's, you know, blue is definitely one of those calming, soothing colors. Whereas red and orange are more, you know, vibrant and exciting colors. You know, they bring up more energy, a different vibration. And they're all, there's no color better than any other color. It's just how you want to set your tone.
Yes. And I mean, everybody has different colors of the spectrum that they seem to relate to more, but yes, that changes. I have always loved orange. Mm. Orange. And when people ask you, oh, what's your favorite color? Which is common when you're a kid. Yeah. And even as an adult too, I've always liked orange, and I painted a lot with orange. And Somebody told me one time, and then I looked it up. Orange is the most uncommon favorite color. Blue is a very common favorite color. Mm-hmm. I love blue. I've painted a lot with blue too. like blues and oranges are my two complementary colors that I use the most. So, and I have a friend who said to me one time, looking at my painting, wow, all that orange. I never use orange. And then I thought about it. He was a painter. He always paints in greens. Greens and grays, and I don't even have green paint. Like, that doesn't belong in my paintings.
Oh, how funny.
Yes, people have these natural tendencies. They go to, you know, what works for them, what expresses what they have to express.
Yeah. Speaking of expression, the ways that you express yourself and see the universe is through sacred geometry.
I have just been naturally drawn to geometry. For a long time, I used geometry a lot in my artwork, and I am using it I'm not investigating a geometry, seeing what it means and putting it in my artwork. It's very intuitive. So sometimes, and maybe more often than not, after I see it, I kind of get what it means for me in that painting, why it's working there. But I have done during the pandemic time when everyone was indoors. I don't know if you know Robert Edward Grant, but he's a polymath, and he has a lot of material online. He did a course on YouTube of drawing geometries, and every day you would draw an icosahedron, a dodecahedron, with very simple tools, with a compass and a ruler, basically. And when I first started doing them, I didn't have a compass, so you could even do it without a compass, with a string. You can, here you hold this, and here are you with your pencil, and you can draw around and make a circle. Mm-hmm. So with a very simple, and a straight edge, you don't need a ruler to measure, just a straight edge, a string and a pencil, basically, you can make a perfect dodecahedron in perspective. So all coming from Metatron's cube, which for me, that geometry has been foundational for a long time. I always go back to the Flower of Life, which Metatron's cube fits into that, and all of the platonic solids fit into that, and it's just remarkable. And there's so much more in it that I, you know, mathematically speaking, that I don't know, but I use geometries. And I got this from Robert Edward Grant. He said, the more you draw geometry, the more you train your mind to see patterns. And it's almost like magic. Really, you draw some geometry and you've got clarity, mental clarity. It's really surprising. Yeah. So I really got into drawing geometry. And then I find that as I draw, and not just geometry, but also curves, circles, as I just allow myself to draw, what I'm drawing is giving me information. So I can tune into different people, I can tune into different situations, and with the pencil in hand and just drawing, I get clarity, I get information, I get clarity about something, and it's really fascinating. I mean, it's a very intuitive process for me. But it's a way for me to just be in the zone. The drawing with pencil in hand, just holding that pencil, all of a sudden I'm now like much more in tune. I'm prepared to listen to my internal and even my external world. And the act of drawing a line, in its essence, it's one of the most primal acts there is. like cave painting, you know, just make your mark. And there's something very primal about it, that when we strip away all of the wants, what you're going to do, or just making marks, it is brings you back to your primal essence, your primal nature. And from there, you can go different places. So I am much more centered and in tune just by making these marks. And then from that state, I can gather different kinds of information.
One of my favorite things about my birthday is that every year Rosemary draws a specific, an organic shape. She tunes in to me and my soul and where I'm at, and she allows a beautiful geometric pattern to arise. And then she sends me that pattern, and then she describes it, like what she saw and, you know, what it meant to her. And then it's open to my own interpretation as well. And it's such an incredible gift. I look forward to that every single year.
Thank you for saying. I'm glad you appreciate it. You give me a reason to do this.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're really, it's almost like you're reading the Akashic records in a way and bringing them into physicalness in a very unique, organic, non-structured way that is open to interpretation, that helps us to tune into our own Akashic records, so to speak.
That's cool. I know I'm tapping into something, because as again, when you're then centered and in this state, all of a sudden everything opens up, the information starts to flow through, and it just becomes, like we were saying, an organic process that I'm sure lots of people could do this. Other people do it with sound. I listen to, and I love Eileen McCusick and her biofield tuning with tuning forks. And she does remote tuning for groups of people, but by hitting the tuning fork, she's able to discern people's blockages, people's like flows, different emotional blockages. And I kind of feel the same way with a pencil. As I'm drawing along, I can feel, oh, there's something here. And I get an idea of what that is. You know, is this an emotional problem? Is this a relation problem? Is this a, there's something in that, that then that information is coming to me.
Wow, that is just so cool.
So I'm sure there's a lot to be developed there. And I know also the, like for things like, you know, oh, a pain, I have a pain here. By drawing, you can also direct the energy. And I would say it's like a metaphor. I'm drawing the energy to leave. So I'm putting my intention through an action, and then it happens.
Isn't that amazing? The power of our focused thought, the power of our focused consciousness. We have the ability to move things with our consciousness.
So, yes, this is it. It's not magic. It's right. Constructed. It's a metaphor so that our mind can be focused on that intention and carry it through. And I'm sure some people are more effective at it than others, but it's not foreign to human nature. It's the kind of thing that everybody's got within. Like we were saying before, there's so many latent abilities within.
Exactly. You know, how many times could we just simply heal ourselves if we drew it out and just started to really give it a shape, give it a form, bring our awareness to it, and then redraw it in the way that we want it to be?
Yes, this is it. And I I love this. It's so much fun too when you're drawing, like, you know, what's inside me right now, and just let it draw. And it's like, oh my God, I didn't know that. But you see it. You see it in the drawing. And you can also, you know, write a sentence. My intention is to draw this relationship problem. And then you just start drawing. And then you go back and you look at it and say, well, wow, what's this trying to tell me? And there's stuff there. Everybody can find out for themselves. Yes, lots of exploration to be done. And of course, the more you do something, the more receptive you are for that kind of information to come through. But pencil and paper really are all you need, and your conscious intention.
Exactly. It's phenomenal, the tools that we have at our disposal that nobody really thinks about, you know, because we've just been taught, you know, here's the way you do. You go to the doctor, you do this, you take a pill, or like, there are so many other ways that we can find rebalancing. I mean, that's the whole premise of healing. It's just the act of rebalancing our body, mind, and soul, so we come back into blueprint, into alignment.
And that's where geometry, the sacred geometry, comes in. Because if you're drawing whatever it is, let's say your knee pain or something like that, and then you can place a geometric pattern, you know, a pristine, pure geometric symbol, and put that in there. It's coherent. And once you recognize the incoherence and replace it with coherence, energetically, you've changed the situation. And as they say, the form is the last thing that changes. If you've changed the energetics, then the form will itself follow.
Exactly.
Speaking of bodies, another thing that I've been really attuned to and coherence is our food. Now, I mean, right, there's a lot that everyone can talk about, our system of industrial agriculture and the problems with our water and all of that. But, you know, that's just such a big problem. You're not going to solve it by yourself. What can you do? How can you be empowered? And I realize that this kind of tuning in that we're talking about, you can tune in to your own system, your digestive system. Our intestines are a universe of bacteria, you know, the kinds that help us and the kinds that don't. It's a huge ecosystem. And being aware of it kind of puts you in, it's almost like I'm quantumly entangled with this whole ecosystem that I am supporting with my body. And this is the outcome that I desire. And so you are, first of all, like preparing your food and your body before you eat it to receive that. And then, you know, letting your ecosystem know that this is the kind, this coherent state is the one that I want to be in. So, you know, whatever organisms are not in there doing that, they can go someplace else. And so you can have a healthy balance within your body. And when you're in a state of gratitude, appreciation for the food, no matter what it is, the simplest food, even food that maybe somebody offers you that you might not have chosen to eat, but you eat it out of respect, you can appreciate that. And then from that state of gratitude, you're entangled with it in a way that you're going to have a positive outcome. It's going to become you, because our food becomes you. Yes. You're what you eat, right? Your food becomes you. So before you even consume it, having this state of appreciation. And I bless my food in a very simple way, but it's a very It's almost like a namaste to the food. The divine in me recognizes the divine in you. And that all of a sudden starts this entanglement with the food where we both know that we're from the divine. And then it becomes my body, and it's naturally in harmony with the harmonic state that I'm in. So, I mean, this is something that we can all do. Sure, it's better to eat an organic apple, but we can kind of override the negative aspects of our food by our own coherence. When we have our own coherence established and set and are in respect of and appreciate that divineness in all things, it doesn't matter. The other stuff doesn't matter. That noise doesn't come in. And I talk about it as noise because really I can tune into the noise of my, it sounds weird, but like food makes a lot of noise as it digests. It like there's a lot of conversation and, you know, all kinds of stuff going on. And I find certain things are quieter and I appreciate that quiet. So I prefer I choose food that's going to be quieter and not be so loud. And I think it's a very interesting thing to know, just everyone on their own. What does this sound like as I'm digesting? Is it making a whole lot of noise and commotion, or is it just, you know, digesting nicely and becoming me?
Wow, I love that. So what would be a quiet food for you?
Well, every meal, you know, is different. What does my body need at this moment, kind of thing. I personally eat a lot of fruits and vegetables and organically raised, and I like my water to be purified and structured, and that kind of food, I'd say in general, is quieter. But it depends on each individual and where they are. If somebody's used to eating a lot of junk food, that kind of food might not settle well if they just made an instant change. So they're going to have bacteria in them craving that junk food. And when they're not getting it, it's going to be noisy. So these cravings are often not our body, but the needs of the organisms within us that are craving because their survival depends on it. Right. So it depends on what you're used to eating and what everything's going to sound like to you. But I think that, like anything, a general state of coherence is much more enjoyable.
Yes.
Than coherence, and it's quiet, and it then doesn't clog your brain, doesn't give you brain fog, and then you're aware and alert and enjoying your day.
Beautiful. And you do some, speaking of your art, you are doing something else with your art these days. You're doing some digital things that are NFTs. Is that the right?
I have dabbled in the world of NFTs, but NFTs are really just a place to, it's like a marketplace for your art. It's putting it in an NFT, a digital art piece in an NFT form, but it doesn't really have anything to do with the art itself.
Right.
Digital art is more likely to, it makes more sense to be an NFT form than physical art, because if I have a painting, I don't really need to put it as an NFT and have a digital replica of it, although people do that, you can. But the world of NFTs is, it's basically a marketplace and a showcase where, because you can have virtual exhibitions and sell things with crypto. And I mean, it's huge. The market is huge for in that world. Yes, I have, I'll just tell you briefly, the last, project, my art project that I've been working on with digital art. Because if you create digital art, the question is, how do you show it? Do you print it and put it on a wall, or do you sell it as an NFT and it's visible on a screen? You know, there's people have different choices for that. And a lot of people collect the NFTs. They just have them. They don't have them as works of art hanging on their wall. So it, you know, it's kind of like an investment. But as everything, like the drawing of the sensations in my physical body, or, you know, the drawing, I feel that that act has an influence really on my outer world. There's this interplay. So I have for a long time now understood that as a society, really, our creation myths are myths, a lot of the Greek myths and legends, the stories that we all know, kind of have all formed us in formed our belief systems in a way that not really might not be the best thing for us. And of course, a lot of beliefs come from everywhere, from our upbringing, from our culture, from our religions, from all kinds of things. But I went to the Adam and Eve myth, which the Adam and Eve story, which is a story that I've been thinking about for a long time, as this is really a Western civilization creation story, the first man and woman, and this garden of paradise. And that whole idea, where is that garden? Not physically on earth, where is it, but what happened to it? And then, you know, just question everything. Well, did that garden exist? Did, like, what are Adam and Eve the only people there? Where are the other people? Like, what if they were allowed to eat all of the fruit? What if there was no rule that said they couldn't eat it? Maybe that isn't true. And then what are the implications of this? So all of these, what would happen if you just started taking it apart, dismantling that story? What would happen if there was a garden and there was no mandate that said you couldn't eat that fruit?
Exactly. What if the entire planet was that garden?
Yes. So the guilt of Eve, which is something that has gone on, women have borne the guilt and shame ever since, which is a long time, that would be gone.
Yes.
Maybe that fruit was actually like divine knowledge. Maybe it was the right thing to do. Maybe, you know, there's all kinds of, if you're just playing around with these stories and just change a little bit, you can alter the stories in a way that affect your basic understanding of who you are and who, you know, how our roles in society have played out. So I like to then create artwork from these kinds of conceptual rearrangements. What does a guilt-free Eve look like? What does the garden look like? How does, you know, how can we create a new garden? All of these kinds of things. And by putting my attention there, then at some level, it's happening. If I'm directing my energy and attention to these concepts, well, okay, now I'm going to create a new garden. And I'm going to put a free Eve in it. That has an energetic effect on the whole pot of human thought and emotion. So that's the kind of thing that I like to play with.
I love that. And is there a way that people can find your art if they want to take a peek at it?
Sure. They can put these are this project I don't have online yet because I've been just working on it recently, but I can definitely, you can post my website and a couple of other places.
Great.
Everyone's welcome to come to look, to ask me questions. They can, my contact information is there. So yes.
Fantastic. I think everybody should see your art because I love it. I think it's beautiful and, you know, so thought provoking and just so beautifully unique.
So thank you.
Yeah. So if you are, as because you are watching this now, you check the show notes and you will find all of Rosemary's links in the show notes. Rosemary, this has been such an incredible conversation. I'm so happy that you chose to come on and share your soul story with us today.
Well, Lisa, thank you for having me. It's been fun. Yes. Reflect and create, co-create this space with you.
Yes. So I certainly hope that everybody will just take a few moments and tune in to the Blue Light Sanctuary and find that space that is so calming and beautiful and soothing and that allows us to have that space to simply be and connect.
Yes. And visit it often. Why go to a spa once when you can go every day?
Exactly. Beautiful. So, Rosemary, thank you so much. This has been such a great conversation.
Thank you, Lisa. I'm very honored to have been here. And thank you to everyone who's listening.
Yes, thank you all. So thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of Soul Stories, because every soul has a story. So I'm Lisa Warner. I am the author of The Simplicity of Self-Healing. You can find that on Amazon or at your local bookseller. So thank you all for tuning in today. And until next time, create for yourselves a great story because you can.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye for now.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Connecting You to You Radio. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe and share it with your friends. Are you ready to discover more about how simple healing your body can actually be when you do it from the higher wisdom of your soul? To learn more about what I do and how you can work with me, visit connectingyoutoyou.com and get on my mailing list to be the first to know about my latest offerings. If you'd like to interact with me on Facebook, please join my group, Soul Sourced Healing. Check the show notes below for these links and more. I hope to see you again next time on Connecting You to You Radio.